The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and also from the Harvard Heart Letter. And the last thing I did in my previous show was to read an article about blood pressure medications, and I just want to briefly finish up that article. The take-home message from the article was, don't hesitate to tell your doctor if you notice mood changes or other unpleasant side effects after starting a new medication, according to Dr. Zussman. With blood pressure drugs, symptoms like feeling tired or lightheaded are not unusual during the first week or so, but they often resolve once your body adjusts. Depression might develop soon after you start a new drug, or possibly months later. It's worth asking your doctor about switching to one of the medications linked to a lower risk of depression, if you're not on one of them already. Remember that those drugs were enalapril, ramipril, amlodipine, verapamil, propranolol, atenolol, bisoprolol, and carbidolol. But never stop taking any blood pressure drug abruptly. You can develop rebound hypertension, which raises your risk of a heart attack or stroke, Dr. Zussman stresses. Always make any changes gradually and under your doctor's guidance. Continuing with the Harvard Heart Letter for December 2020, an interesting article that has been discussed in the news is, can a smartwatch diagnose a heart attack? This technology isn't ready for prime time yet, but detecting various heart problems with a smartwatch could become a reality within the decade. To diagnose a heart attack, doctors look for distinctive patterns on a tracing of the heart's electrical activity using a test known as a 12-lead electrocardiogram, or ECG. Now, a small study suggests that ECG readings taken with a smartwatch may be just as accurate as a traditional ECG done in medical settings. While these new findings show potential, the real-world applicability is still years away. This study is more of a proof of principle rather than something that's clinically useful, says Harvard Medical School professor Dr. Peter Livy, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. ECG recording challenges. One main reason is obtaining an ECG with a smartwatch requires carefully holding the back of the watch on the wrist and at 8 specific locations on the chest and abdomen. In the study, physicians, not the study participants, placed the watch in those positions. In a few people, other health problems, like Parkinson's disease or a previous stroke, made it impossible to get a clear signal, Dr. Libby notes. The smartwatch, like other popular smartphone-linked ECG devices, can have a wavy baseline if not applied carefully. Also, even if someone with a suspected heart attack was able to capture successfully all 9 ECG readings, the results would still need to be interpreted by a physician. So for now, the advice for the general public remains the same. If you have chest pain or discomfort, don't mess around with your smartwatch. Call 911, says Dr. Libby. For the study, researchers obtained both standard and smartwatch ECGs on 81 people who sought care for a likely heart attack at one Italian clinic from April 2019 to January 2020. Two-thirds were men, and their average age was 61. For comparison, Both types of ECGs were also done on 19 healthy people. The smartwatch-generated ECGs were 93 to 95% accurate at correctly identifying and distinguishing between different types of heart attacks. Just to remind you, in order to obtain the smartwatch ECG, you had to hold the back of the watch on the wrist and at 8 locations on the chest and abdomen. Among the healthy people, the watch's accuracy was 90% for correctly noting the absence of a heart attack. The findings were published in the August 31st, 2020 issue of JAMA Cardiology. Researchers used an Apple Watch Series 4 to record the ECGs, which were then uploaded to an iPhone 11 Pro, the latest available versions of those products. But as Dr. Libby points out, the innovations that enabled the first recordings of the heart's weak electrical currents date back to the early 1900s. Dutch physician Willem Einthoven was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine for inventing the first practical ECG in 1924, in other words, about 100 years ago. Current status, future directions. The FDA has already approved the Apple Watch's built-in ECG tool for detecting atrial fibrillation, also called AFib, a rapid irregular heart rhythm that raises the risk of stroke. If your watch detects this arrhythmia, your doctor can use a simple formula that takes into account your age, sex, and other health problems to estimate your risk of stroke, says Dr. Libby. If your stroke risk is high enough and you aren't at high risk for bleeding, your doctor might recommend anti-clotting medications to lower your stroke risk. So far, however, it's not clear whether finding AFib with a smartwatch app translates to better outcomes, in other words, fewer strokes. Physicians also worry about being inundated with ECG tracing sent from concerned patients who get alerts about possible AFib on their Apple Watches, Dr. Libby says. As for detecting heart attacks, an editorial accompanying the new study conjures an image of a smart watch-toting cardiologist evaluating chest pain out in public, at a restaurant or on an airplane, for example. But home-based ECGs for patients are on the horizon, according to the article. Dr. Libby agrees, this is technology with a great future. Coupling wearable devices with artificial intelligence will transform our ability to monitor and predict heart disease, he says. In this capacity, artificial intelligence would use machine learning to parse massive amounts of data from regular ECGs. The resulting algorithms may one day be able to predict atrial fibrillation, heart attacks, and heart failure, perhaps years in advance. Quality control and regulatory issues will dictate the timeline, but Dr. Libby expects these improved smartwatches will be on the market in less than 10 years. Another article from the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2020 is called, When You Take These Popular Pain Relievers, Proceed with Caution. Over-the-counter and prescription drugs known as NSAIDs, that's capital N-S-A-I-D-S, pose a risk to the cardiovascular symptoms. Just a reminder, the commonly used NSAIDs, the ones that you can get over-the-counter are Voltaren, Advil, Motrin, Aleve, and Naprosyn. The ones you can get by prescription are Celebrex, Zorvolex, Tyvorbex, Mobic, and Vivlodex. the generic names for those ones that you can get by prescription are celecoxib, diclofenac, indomethacin, and meloxicam. Many people stock pain relievers in their medicine cabinets for headaches or strained muscles. Among the most common are nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, which include the over-the-counter pills ibuprofen and naproxen, as well as many prescription drugs. As their name indicates, NSAIDs help to reduce inflammation. They may be more effective than other pain relievers, namely acetaminophen, which is also called Tylenol, for certain conditions like arthritis. But because NSAIDs are available without a prescription, people often assume these drugs are completely safe. And they may overlook the warning that appears on ibuprofen and naproxen labels, which reads, "Heart attack and stroke warning." NSAIDs, except aspirin, increase the risk of heart attack, heart failure, and stroke. These can be fatal. The risk is higher if you use more than directed or for longer than directed. Notice that they point out that aspirin is a unique case. Aspirin doesn't increase the risk of heart attack, heart failure, and stroke, and in fact can be taken to prevent these conditions. As a result, most cardiologists are cautious about recommending these drugs. It's best to avoid NSAIDs, but if you absolutely need to take one, take the smallest dose for the shortest period of time, says Harvard Medical School professor Dr. Elliot Antman, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. How NSAIDs affect the heart. The cardiovascular risk from taking non-aspirin NSAIDs is twofold. These drugs can cause the kidneys to hold on to salt and water, which tends to raise blood pressure. Like aspirin, NSAIDs have some anti-clotting properties and can cause bleeding, especially in the gastrointestinal tract. However, non-aspirin NSAIDs also appear to affect the inner linings of blood vessels and alter other blood substances in a manner that might increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. People who have or are at risk for heart disease may face a greater chance of having a heart attack from taking NSAIDs because their baseline risk is higher. But the drugs also might raise risk among people without heart disease risk factors. Just how much it varies depends on the drug and the dose. If you have a chronic painful condition like rheumatoid arthritis, you may need prescription NSAIDs. Work closely with your doctor to find the safest option. The evidence isn't definitive, but some data suggests that naproxen, and you'll remember naproxen is also called Aleve or naproxen, may be slightly safer than other NSAIDs. But don't take these medications unless you really need them, Dr. Antman cautions. I've had many patients who have sprained a muscle or twisted their back. They feel better after taking an NSAID. But when I see them 2 years later, they're still taking the drugs, simply because no one told them to stop, says Dr. Antman. What are other pain control options? Earlier this year, the FDA approved a topical gel formula of the prescription NSAID diclofenac, which is called Voltaren Arthritis Pain for over-the-counter sale. And the American College of Physicians and the American Academy of Family Physicians recently recommended topical NSAIDs as the first-line treatment for muscle aches and sprains. They are a little bit safer than taking a pill because lower levels of the drug end up in the bloodstream. But it's still real important to follow package directions. The FDA also recently approved Advil Dual Action, an over-the-counter caplet that contains 250 milligrams of ibuprofen as well as 500 milligrams of acetaminophen. This allows people to take a lower dose of each medication. Several non-drug options for coping with pain, like heat and cold therapy, massage, and physical therapy, may also be helpful. In the article, there's a subheading that's entitled Aspirin Advice. For people who've had a heart attack or certain forms of stroke caused by a blood clot, a daily low-dose aspirin can help prevent a recurrence. Aspirin helps by discouraging platelets, tiny cell fragments in the blood, from clumping together and forming blood clots. The cardiovascular benefits usually outweigh the higher risk of bleeding, which ranges from minor problems like a more noticeable skin bruising to dangerous complications like bleeding in the brain or gastrointestinal tract. The advice varies for people who haven't had a heart attack or stroke or received stents or undergoing bypass surgery. Unless they have multiple cardiovascular risk factors and are at a very high risk for heart attack, aspirin's potential benefit may not outweigh the bleeding risk. Finally, in the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2020, there's an article entitled Research We're Watching. The first article is called Resuming Sex Within Months of a Heart Attack is Linked to Longer Survival. Couples sometimes worry about restarting sexual activity after one partner has had a heart attack. But a new study has found that returning to usual levels of sexual activity within a few months of a heart attack is linked to improved survival. The study, published online September 23, 2020, by the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, included 495 sexually active people who were hospitalized for a first heart attack in 1992 or 1993. At that time, they were 65 or younger. The average age was 53, and 90% were men. After a median follow-up of 22 years, 43% of the participants had died. People who maintained or increased the frequency of their sexual activity within the first 6 months after a heart attack had a 35% lower risk of death compared with people who abstained or reduced their sexual activity. The results may reflect other factors associated with improved health, like better fitness and a good relationship with one's spouse, the study authors note. Still, the findings should help allay fears about resuming sex after recovering from a heart attack. The next short article is entitled, Higher Pneumonia Risk with Unfavorable Blood Lipids. People with low HDL, or good cholesterol, and high triglycerides may be more likely to be hospitalized for pneumonia, according to a study in the August 15, 2020 American Journal of Medicine. The study included more than 13,000 people who were part of a long-term study designed to look at lipids and other factors linked to heart disease. Using hospital discharge records, researchers found that 15% of the participants had been hospitalized with pneumonia during the follow-up, which was 21 years. People with low HDL levels, less than 38 milligrams per deciliter, were more likely to be hospitalized with pneumonia than those with higher levels, and the odds of hospitalization dropped as HDL levels rose. Likewise, pneumonia hospitalizations were most common among people with triglyceride levels higher than 157. Those with lower levels were less likely to be hospitalized. The findings support earlier research suggesting a link between the body's ability to fight infections and blood lipid levels, especially HDL. high HDL is associated with a lower risk of heart disease. But this molecule also may play an important role in healthy immune response. So just to summarize, if you have a high HDL, you have a lower risk of heart disease. You may have an increased ability to fight infections. And particularly, it looks like you will have a reduced likelihood of hospitalization for pneumonia. Fish oil drug helps shrink plaque in heart arteries. A drug made from a highly purified form of EPA, an omega-3 fatty acid found in fish, appears to help reduce plaque in heart arteries, according to a study published online August 29, 2020, by the European Heart Journal. The findings may explain why the drug icosapent ethyl, which is called VASCEPA, that's the brand name, VASCEPA, lowers the risk of heart attack and stroke by 26% in people at high risk for those serious conditions. The study included 80 people with fatty plaque in the arteries of the heart. Most of them had diabetes and were taking a statin. Their triglycerides were elevated from 135 to 499 milligrams per deciliter. Half were randomly assigned to take 4 grams of icosapent ethyl daily. Remember, that's the drug called VASCEPA. The other half received a placebo. After 18 months, imaging tests showed that compared with the placebo group, the group taking the drug had less unstable or dangerous plaque. The total volume of plaque was also lower among those taking the drug. And remember, having this low amount of plaque apparently lowers the risk of heart attack and stroke by as much as 26%. Now we're going to read from the Harvard Health letter. This is also from December of 2020. And the first article is entitled, Coping with Face Mask Discomfort. A few adjustments may be all it takes to help you keep your mask on and your COVID guard up. We all have to wear a face mask these days to help reduce the spread of COVID-19. But wearing a mask can be uncomfortable. The fix may just be a matter of trying a different type of mask. Here are some common mask complaints and ways to resolve them. It makes my breathing seem harder. Wearing a mask sometimes causes a sensation of uncomfortable breathing or shortness of breath called dyspnea, especially during exercise. Pulling air through the mask, which has some resistance to airflow, can require a small increase in the effort it takes to breathe, and you may notice it, says Dr. Richard Schwartzenstein, a dyspnea specialist and chief of the Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine Division at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. The best strategy is to breathe at a slower rate to decrease the resistance against the mask. Try exhaling with pursed lips, or if you're walking, decrease the pace to lower the demand on your lungs, says Dr. Bartalm Selle, pulmonologist with Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. What about ditching the mask and wearing a face shield? Shields are not replacements for cloth masks worn in the community. If you're infected, a cloth mask may help stop the spread of infection from you to others. Cloth masks may also protect against exposure to virus and respiratory secretions, but more studies are needed given the variety of cloth masks in use, says Dr. Erica Shenoy, Associate Chief of the Infection Control Unit at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. If you're unable to wear a mask, talk to your doctor before switching to a face shield. If it's your only option, the CDC recommends wearing a shield that wraps around the sides of your face and below the chin, and that you stay physically distanced from others. It makes me feel claustrophobic. Having a snug mask on top of your face may make you feel anxious, even triggering claustrophobia, a fear of being in confined spaces. Sometimes when we're anxious, we breathe more rapidly, get more oxygen into the blood, and our heart beats more rapidly. It's merely our body's alarm system performing its evolutionary job, points out A.B. Altman, an associated psychologist at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. First, know that you're in no danger. There's no evidence that wearing a fabric face covering will change the oxygen or carbon dioxide levels in your blood or harm your lungs. Next, focus on breathing. Take slow, deep breaths, which can help relieve anxiety, and practice wearing your mask as much as you can. Unless you're putting a lot of effort into, Altman suggests, anxiety can be significantly reduced by facing your fear and staying with the discomfort until you grow more comfortable. Many health professionals have needed to wear masks all the time they're at work for the first time in their lives, but they've gotten used to it. I'm going to conclude this article the next time. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll see you next time. Thank you.